Father of Storms. Written by Dean Jones. Produced by Be Here. Episode 1.
Be Here. Bringing books to life. Vision. Without sight.
Chapter 1. The Father of Storms. Black clouds roiled across the heavens, sucking all sunlight from the sky and plunging the landscape into an early night as the howling wind of a fierce winter storm threw debris and branches like spears at two men who fought their way through the barrage. Remnants of once mighty trees lay like sentinels, strewn across the earth, with the whine of cracking trunks, crying out in protest at the relentless gusts trying to rip them from the ground. The men involuntarily cowered as the air shook with a clap of thunder, as the unseen bolt exploded an unsuspecting tree ahead of them. The heavens flashed as lightning leapt between the clouds like fingers of the gods, searching for the next victim below. The storm's noise had long since taken the sounds of the men's shouts, making hand signals the only form of communication. The effort of the short journey had taken its toll, but both men dragged themselves onwards, compelling their legs to continue, though tiredness had filled their muscles some time ago. The larger man held his cloak closed as he drove through the winds. He had to get home. Nothing was more important. This storm would not stop him. They reached the bottom of the hill, their goal ahead. The sight lifted their hearts, bringing them renewed energy, and quickened their pace as they made their way up towards the glow of the small house ahead. In the house, three women busied themselves with the tasks ahead of the impending arrival. The light from the fire filled the space with a warm glow that danced around the sparse furniture, seeking out the shadows in the corners. The room was modest, with only a tiny table with two chairs at each end. The ceiling had a crisscross of broad oak beams holding up the roof. Below, the earth floor had furs and pillows arranged as a makeshift bed. One of the older women fussed as she stirred the contents of a stew that hung over the open fire. Her braided red hair hung down the back of a brightly coloured dress, which contrasted the dark hues of the room. She smiled as she lifted the spoon from the bubbling liquid, satisfied it was ready to provide nourishment for the night ahead. Her brown eyes sparkled in the firelight as she gave the broth one final stir, which released a hearty aroma of vegetables and meat into the room. The second woman crouched on the floor as she fussed with her apron. Her grey hair had the same style as the second lady, but her dress was far less vibrant. This woman did not require any colourful attire to mark her out. She had the air of a woman who knew those she served respected her. Her kindly face was filled with the lines of long life and contained wisdom that only years could add. The third woman lay on a bed of animal furs, breathing heavily, with beads of sweat making their way down her face as she bit down on a small stick of wood. She was groaning with pain, trying to maintain her focus so she could bring her first child into the world. Her blonde hair was damp and loose, though no one noticed, as they all had specific tasks to complete. The bulge in her stomach moved as she again grunted in agony.
"Hush, Edith,"
the older lady said as she wiped the gathering sweat from around the soon-to-be mother's face.
"You listen to old me now, child. It's nearly time."
Edith shook her head as her eyes flicked to the door. May followed her gaze before glancing back with a smile.
"He'll be here soon, you mark my words,"
she declared, arranging her skirts about her as she nestled down next to Edith.
"Garrett has only been late once in his life, and that was the day I brought him into this world. So don't worry, he won't be missing the arrival of his first child."
Edith threw back her head. Her scream, stifled by the stick in her teeth, expressed her panic as she convulsed with pain, knowing she couldn't hold back the urge to push any longer.
"Ardeth, hurry with the water. It's time,"
May called. Ardeth left the stew and then pulled a pot from beside the fire, carrying it over to where they were waiting. May straightens up the furs and whispers into Edith's ear while stroking her hair.
"The waiting is over. Are you ready to meet your child?"
Edith nodded as she bit down on the stick between her teeth again, as another wave of pain filled her. May began a soothing hum as the wood again muffled the young woman's scream.
"What a night to be birthing, May,"
Ardith said as she hovered behind the old woman.
"I've never heard of a storm like this, nor seen one take hold so quickly in all my years."
May looks up briefly at Ardith, then nods towards the pot bubbling over the fire. Instinctively, she knows what May is telling her to do. Without a word, she moved promptly back to the pot to stir the contents, sending a fresh wave of earthiness into the small room. May gives Edith another reassuring smile.
"Pay no attention to our death, my dear. The Father of Storms is active, but he is only removing the weak and fallen from the land so new life can begin. It's a good omen on this night. You should take heart, as it appears the gods themselves are watching."
Suddenly, the door crashed open and the storm entered the room, searching out the warmth and trying to tear it from those who hold it dear. The fire struggles to keep hold as the two men fall through the open door, immediately closing it behind them. Edith looks up, catches Garrett's eye, and then breathes a sigh of relief as Ardeth rushes from the hearth to meet them both. Before they can take in the scene that's playing out, she drags them through a curtain and out of the room. May looks down at Edith. A knowing smile creeps across her lips.
"Are you ready now?"
Edith grunts as she begins to push, delirious with the pain. May continues her humming, whispers as she strokes Edith's bare arm gently.
"You stay here, Garrett,"
Ardeth says as she pulls the curtain closed.
"There's no place for men when there's a birthing going on. You too, Felix,"
she points at the smaller man.
"There's never a place for you when anything important is happening."
Ardeth gave them both a stern expression to enforce her words before turning back through the curtain, leaving them alone with only the smell of the food on the fire and the sound of the muffled screams coming from Edith for company. Garrett removes his cloak and then places it on a small stool under the window before moving to the curtain to put his ear against the cloth. Behind him, Felix surveys the small room. He lifts his nose into the air, smelling the air around them, whilst involuntarily licking his lips in anticipation of the promise of the food the aroma brings. Finally, Garrett turns from the curtain to Felix, who is placing his cloak on top of his own. Felix glances back to see his brother wringing his hands, looking as helpless as he has ever seen him.
"Sit down. You do no good guarding the curtain,"
he said. Garrett pauses for a moment before heading to the stool under the window and sitting on both their soaked cloaks. Time passes, with the night falling as they wait, bringing deep darkness. The storm continues to rage outside the window as Garrett listens to his wife's screams and groans. The noise of Edith's struggles mingled with the sound of May's and Ardeth's encouragement, along with the singing of the soft birthing songs to help soothe and ease the coming of the new life. Suddenly, an almighty wail filled the air, followed by congratulatory comments from Ardeth. Garrett stood, then moved towards the curtain. He stopped when he heard only silence where he expected a baby's cry. Felix placed a hand on his elder brother's arm, glancing down with sadness in his eyes. The weight of the silence hit Garrett heavily in the chest. He dropped back to the stool with a thump. Beyond the curtains were sounds of hurried activity and muffled cries from his wife. But he paid them little heed, as he knew his child was stillborn and that it would take a miracle for it to draw breath. Garrett stood, staring out the window into the dark, stormy night, then closed his eyes. He listened to the wind as it pulled the creaking branches of the trees outside. He held his breath for a second. At that moment, he opened his heart to the night.
Thuno, almighty god of thunder, you are present this night, removing the weakness from the land, and I ask your help to bring my child through the darkness, so his soul may find the vessel that we have created for it. Please show mercy on my child. They may be weak now, but I know in my heart the child will grow strong.
He prayed whilst bowing his head reverently. There was a blinding flash in the sky, followed by an almighty boom as lightning spread across the dark clouds above them. The sound shook the house. Even Garrett flinched in fear. Then, as the thunder disappeared, the most joyful tones Garrett had ever heard replaced it. A baby's cry. A few moments later, Ardith came through the curtain with a bundle of tightly wrapped cloth, making her way to where Garrett stood.
Here is your son, Garrett. He's a fine boy.
Garrett gazed down at the bundle in Ardith's arms. A small face peeked up at him. He glanced at Felix, standing to the side, grinning proudly, then turned back to Ardith.
Edith,
he asked, his deep voice filling the silence his son's arrival had brought. Ardith looked at him with gentle eyes.
She's been through a lot this night, Gareth. Your son is a boy after his father's image, and Edith is only a small woman to be birthing a boy so big.
The words hung in the air. Garrett couldn't bring himself to let them into his ears, believing that if they stayed where they were, their meaning would be less than it was.
May is taking good care of her, but she's lost a lot of blood and is weak from pushing.
Ardith saw the look on Garrett's face, then quickly added,
but she is a strong woman. She'll be fine.
Garrett stared blankly at the curtain again. Only moments before, there had been the sounds of childbirth, but now only the rhythmic hum of May's voice carried through the air to where he stood. Ardith nudged the big man's arm with the baby, held out for Garrett to take. Garrett looked down, holding out his hands without thinking. Ardith placed the boy into them, pulled back, and left the room to return to May and Edith. Garrett stood, frozen, with his son wriggling in his hands. Only when the baby let out another cry did he wake from his reverie. He stared into the deep blue eyes of his son. A warmth passed over him as though being embraced by a blanket. The tiny features of his new life struck him as he placed a massive hand on the boy's forehead. Beneath his fingers, he felt the down softness of his hair. The baby stared deep into Garrett's eyes and touched his heart. He pulled him close for the first time, then breathed a whisper into his ear.
Your mother is fighting in that room, my son. I need you to reach out to her and bring her back to us.
A smile forced its way onto Garrett's lips as he looked again into his child's eyes. Garrett was sure he saw understanding in his son's eyes.
Pass him over, Garrett.
Felix made his way over with his arms outstretched. Garrett looked up from his son, then passed him across to Felix, who held him up for inspection. Then, seemingly satisfied with what he saw, he held him close to take a breath of his newborn nephew.
There's something about the smell of babies, don't you think so, Garrett?
Garrett nodded absent-mindedly as he moved towards the curtain again, listening intently for any noise or murmur from Edith. Instead, there was a gurgle behind him, then a tiny cry as Felix turned to Garrett to pass his son back to him.
Don't think he likes me,
Felix said as Garrett took the boy from him.
Garrett!
It was Edith calling. He shot through the curtain and he was at her side in a heartbeat, cradling their son in his bear-like arms whilst crouching beside her. Her smile warmed his heart as relief washed over him. His beautiful wife looked exhausted, but her face filled with happiness at the sight of her son. Edith glanced from Garrett to their son.
What do you want to call him? I thought Kendrick, after your father.
Garrett shook his head as a question formed in his head.
Will she get well again?
He asked May, the concern in his voice unmistakable. May smiled as she looked at the baby.
It was the sound of his cry which brought her back. So long as he's around, she'll be back to full health in no time.
She brushed the nose of the boy with her finger and nodded to him.
Seth. We'll name him Seth.
Garrett spoke with a decisive tone, letting all know he'd made up his mind. Edith looked at her husband.
That's a strange name. Why Seth?
She asked.
I recall speaking to a trader, a dark-skinned man dressed in ornate robes, who spoke with a poet's tongue. We met by chance. I was returning from the south with my brothers and discovered him surrounded by bandits. Normally, we would have left the stranger to his fate, but his clothing and accent marked him as a visitor, so I felt compelled to aid him. We chased off the raiders, and then we helped him gather his things. He insisted on repaying us with something from his wares, a hot drink of a spiced liquid, which warmed our bellies.
He smiled at the memory.
We got talking, and he told me a story of his gods. One in particular, I remember, was Seth, who he claimed was the god of storms. He was mistaken, as we know that god is Thunor. But maybe in this land, Thunor goes by a different name.
He gazed down at his son.
And after this ferocious storm we've just experienced today, I cannot think of a better name to give our son.
May nodded thoughtfully, then took Seth from his father's arms.
Well, young Seth, that's a mighty fine name to be carrying around with you.
She paused for a moment as she considered the child in her arms. Seth stared up at May with an unmistakable understanding she hadn't seen in many years.
Your cry drowns out the storm which brought you into this life. The sound comforts your mother, but I dare say too much of it will bring the opposite, especially if you decide to keep her awake with your demands.
She gave a knowing laugh, and Felix clapped his hands on his brother's shoulder.
She's not wrong there,
he whispered into his brother's ear. Seth gave a gurgle as he shifted in May's grip. She passed him to Edith, who held her son for the first time. A tear rolled down her cheek and she gazed into his deep eyes.
Are you hungry, my beautiful boy? Oh, you must be after all this.
Edith sat back on the furs, bringing Seth to her. He took the invitation quickly and began his first feed. Chapter 2. Prisoner. Seth opened his eyes and took some deep breaths to clear his head, but the incessant buzzing was so distracting that he couldn't think straight. He scanned the room as he attempted to familiarise himself with his surroundings, but didn't know where he was. The dark room slowly became focused as he searched for anything he could use as a reference. There was a hum of ceiling fans above him, but sometimes that was lost to the buzzing in his head. Groggily, he rolled from the bed, landing with a thud on the cold stone floor. Visions popped in and out of his mind. Pictures of a woman and a little girl lying on the road surrounded by scorch marks. The room was a small rectangular space without any windows. The only light source was from the square ceiling light above him. He shook his head, then raised himself to his haunches, still breathing deeply, trying to slow his heart, which was racing faster than he would have expected having just awoken. The images in his mind faded, then reformed what these memories were. He wasn't sure, but he recognised the woman and child.
Marcy. Hope.
He said, as the realisation hit him. He put his hands to his temples to rub the image away. Then, trying hard to clear his mind, he focused on what he knew. He was in a room, but didn't know where it was or how he got there. Climbing to his feet, he paced the floor to the wall and counted 6 steps. Finally, he turned to look back and could see a toilet placed in the corner, clearly intended for his use. Suddenly, there was a click. Seth turned to his left to see a TV hanging from the corner of the room. On it, he saw a segment from the news reporter called Nicola Stewart. She was talking about some kind of disaster, it seemed. The TV was silent, but Seth watched the pictures. Across the bottom of the screen, under her name, was a scrolling script describing a mass murder in London. It stated that police searched for a man they believed had set off a bomb or electromagnetic charge. It also said 57 people, including a 15-year-old girl and her mother, believed to be the attacker's family, were dead. Then, on the screen, a photograph showed his wife and daughter laughing at something. He remembered the picture and the day he had taken it. Then, as suddenly as it had come on the TV, was off again. Seth replayed the images of his wife and daughter in his mind, with this reporter seemingly confirming that they were dead.
It couldn't happen. I don't believe it,
Seth said to himself, trying to drive the images from his mind. The buzzing in his head returned. With it, so did the images of Marcy and Hope's burned, broken bodies on the ground. It didn't make sense to him. The hairs on his arm stood up. He felt like someone had just walked over his grave. Turning, he saw a huge glass mirror. He had seen enough TV shows to know that the mirror of this size can only mean one thing. It was one-way glass, and someone was watching him from the other side. But who? Putting his hands on the glass, he stared into his reflection, wondering what was happening.
Is there someone in there?
He shouted as he banged a fist on the glass.
Answer me, who are you? Why am I being held here?
The sound of a turning lock stopped him. To his left, the door opened slowly. He thought about running for the door and tackling whoever was on the other side. Instead, the buzzing increased and his thoughts swam in his mind, leaving him struggling to think. He dropped to his knees as more images of the dead family came unbidden to his consciousness. Three men entered the room. The first had a white hood over his head, hiding his face. He stooped slightly as he shuffled into the room, followed by two suited men with grim expressions on their faces.
I see you are awake, Seth,
the hooded man said as he stopped in front of Seth. His voice carried authority in his low-pitched tones. Each word was punctuated with a tiny breath, forcing the listener to concentrate fully on what was being said.
I must admit to enjoying the sight of you cowering at my feet. It is fitting, given the merry chase you have led me.
Seth stared into the darkness where this man's face should be. The buzzing was intense. The images were so vivid, Seth felt sick at the sight, but it didn't feel real, so he fought the memories as he tried to focus on this man who clearly had an issue with him.
Who are you?
He grunted through his gritted teeth.
Oh, I am nobody. Merely an interested party, keen to learn exactly what you know and how you, tick.
The sickly politeness of the man's voice struck a chord in Seth's memory. When he tried to place it, the pictures of his family resurfaced. He decided it was easier to keep his mind in the here and now.
You see, Seth, I have been watching you for a long time. In fact, I thought this moment would never arrive. I have spent a lot of energy and significant finances to get you exactly where I wanted you. Now, it seems, I am on the brink of success.
Seth's neck began to ache from looking up at this man. Still, the voice triggered recognition, but he found it difficult to hold on to solid thoughts, never mind memories, in the present circumstances.
There was a time after the Second World War where I believed you were dead, as you just disappeared. I will admit that upon thinking about it, I felt a tinge of sadness and a lot of regrets at the thought of a world where you no longer existed.
There was a snap as the man clicked his fingers. One of the trailing men placed a chair beside him. The man lowered himself onto the seat, put his hands onto his knees, and then gently tapped an unknown beat as he stared down at Seth. Uncomfortable as the buzzing was, Seth didn't like being looked down on, so he fought to raise himself onto his knees to face this man, whoever he was.
You are so strong, Seth. I have never met anyone with your strength of will and character, but I suppose it is to be expected. It's a shame that things have turned out the way they have. I did hope we could have been partners and worked together in the best interests of each other. Mainly in my interests, but you'll agree every partnership needs a leader.
Seth clenched his jaw tightly as another wave of memories flooded his mind, and that goddamn buzzing. Then, with another flash of recognition, he noted that even the irritating noise in his mind seemed to hold a minuscule amount of familiarity around this man.
So strong. It is awe-inspiring,
the man mused.
To business. Are you in a position to cooperate and provide me with some answers?
He asked as he watched the sweat beading on Seth's forehead. Seth was trying hard to maintain a grip on his emotions. The image of his dead wife was something he wouldn't believe, so he fought back the pain. Instead, he tried to focus on the man in front of him.
Where am I?
He growled.
I want you to answer my questions, Seth. I'm not here for yours.
Seth gritted his teeth again, struggling as the same wave of memories flooded his mind. Images of his family dead. He fought with his mind as he tried to dismiss the picture, and he couldn't accept them as genuine.
I don't care. Tell me where I am and where my family is.
Seth found the effort needed to speak was reducing as his body adapted to the strain.
Ah, well, I see you need some, how do I put this, persuasion.
The man lifted himself with an effort from the chair, then turned slowly back towards the door before shuffling towards it. As he passed the two men that followed him into the room, he paused and whispered something inaudible to them before leaving, closing the door softly behind him. Seth was grateful as the buzzing subsided, allowing his mind to clear. He watched the larger of the two men advancing on him. The man raised his hand before bringing it down with a fury in his eyes, which promised nothing but pain. Seth took the punch, only rocking back before a knee connected with his nose, knocking him from his knees to the floor. Two pairs of hands grabbed his shoulders. He considered fighting back, but the buzzing wouldn't let him formulate any defense, never mind attack. He was dragged back to the bed and roughly thrown onto it. Seth watched through watery eyes as the smaller man pulled the chair to sit next to him. He coughed to clear his throat and perhaps get Seth's attention.
My name, Mr. Goodman, is Agent Clarence Harvey. I am here at the direct request of the United States government to ascertain your intentions and discover whether you can be useful to us in some way.
The accent was from the southern states. Seth knew straight away, possibly Texas, though he hadn't been there in a long time. He remembered their particular twang when they spoke. The way Clarence spoke reminded Seth of an actor from the film Lincoln Lawyer, which was one of his favourite movies. Seth's head was clearing now. He raised himself onto his elbow to take in the man called Agent Clarence Harvey. His blonde hair was slicked back, and he could see the contempt in his steely blue eyes.
Now, I would prefer if we didn't have to ask my friend, Agent Blakeford, to strike you again. Though I must admit, watching him work gives me immense pleasure.
Agent Blakeford gleefully rubbed his hands together. Seth looked him up and down, considering him. He was a huge man, both in height and stature. He looked like a mob heavy, Seth thought. He noted that his short brown hair was parted to one side and very neatly cropped.
Agent Blakeford likes to get the answers for me,
Agent Harvey continued.
But as I said, I hope you will cooperate willingly.
This was both a question and a threat. Seth shrugged before pushing himself quickly to a seated position facing the two agents. He took a little satisfaction at the involuntary flinches from both men, then smiled to himself as he continued to try to get the measure of what was going on.
I still don't know what you have me held here for. Perhaps you tell me some things and I will tell you some things,
Seth asked, though he figured the answer wouldn't be helpful.
This is not a negotiation, Mr. Goodman. This is an interrogation.
Agent Harvey laughed, looking up at his colleague, who was smiling.
You clearly do not fully understand the situation you find yourself in. I want information, and you will give it to me willingly, or I will extract it from your bloody, toothless mouth.
The hairs on Seth's arm stood again. He felt static electricity pass over him. The buzzing continued, but he had pushed the images to the back of his mind.
Where are my family?
Seth asked. He needed answers too. Threats from this man were not enough to stop him from asking questions.
That's a question I will be pleased to answer. They are dead, Mr. Goodman. You killed them.
Seth's mind again filled with pictures as his chest strained to contain the emotion building inside him. Tears welled in his eyes as thoughts of life without them began to take hold. He shook his head, trying to get the sight of them out, but his mind refused to block the images.
Yes, you remember, don't you? You killed them along with all those other innocent bystanders. You understand that's why we are here. 2 days ago, you somehow killed 57 people. All that remained were their charred and lifeless bodies, yet you don't have a mark on you.
He leaned forward and grabbed Seth's arm.
How did you do it, Mr. Goodman? This is the answer my government wants to know.
He squeezed Seth's arm tightly. Seth stared at the hand holding his arm. Then, quickly, he grabbed the agent's wrist and pulled it away. Instinct kicked in as he tightened his hold. The agent began to pull away, trying to remove himself from Seth's grip. Seth knew he had the measure of both these men. Slowly, his gaze moved from the arm in his right hand to the shocked face of the agent in front of him.
I asked where my family were. I do not believe what you were telling me. I want to know where they are now.
The calmness in his voice was chilling. The agent grabbed Seth's fingers with his free hand before looking at his friend, who obligingly started to punch Seth in the head. Seth kept his focus on the man whose arm he held. He didn't consider the blows. For him, they were nothing more than a flea trying to bite an elephant. The indifference on Seth's face seemed to fuel the barrage as it increased in intensity. The goal was to force him to release his grip. Instead, he increased the pressure as he slowly twisted the arm. He watched pain replace the panic on Agent Harvey's face. Agent Harvey was shouting now, struggling to free his arm from Seth's vice-like grip. Seth was aware of the door opening with more men entering, but his focus stayed on the man lying to him. Baring his teeth, he gave a flick of his wrist. The sickening snap made everyone stop. Agent Harvey's scream filled the room. Several hands grabbed Seth's arms and shoulders, trying to get him off their colleague, who was now whimpering on the floor, having fallen from the chair when his arm broke. Seth could taste the blood which rolled down his head into his mouth from the blows he had taken, but he didn't care. All he knew was that the buzz was subsiding as his anger built. He wouldn't be held hostage. If he had to, he would fight his way through all these men.
Stop!
Someone shouted. All the men did as they were instructed. Seth looked up from Agent Harvey to discover a newcomer entering the room. This one wasn't wearing the suits which marked the other agents. He wore a white medical coat. Confidently, he strode up to Seth, who was still holding on to Harvey, then looked down at the now crushed arm of the agent.
Seth, I am Dr. Tom Garrett.
A flicker of memory at the name made him look up into the sympathetic brown eyes of this man. His curled brown hair fell around his face, and he smiled at Seth.
That's right, focus on me. Can you please let go of Mr. Harvey's arm, so my team can see about fixing the damage that appears... extensive?
It was a polite English accent. His tone had confidence, which made his words appealing to listen to. This man's appearance caught Seth off guard, as he'd been focused on causing suffering to the agent who had lied to him. Dr. Garrett's demeanour showed no fear of Seth, nor concern for Harvey. Slowly, Seth released the arm. Harvey threw himself backwards away from him once he was free.
You fucking barbarian. I will pull out your fucking eyes.
He spat as Agent Blakeford helped him up from the floor.
Kill this motherfucker, Ted.
He said to Blakeford, who, for a second, looked like he was going to until Dr. Garrett raised his hand to stall the movement.
Now, I don't expect killing our guest would be the most appropriate action given the circumstances we all find ourselves in, would it, Mr. Blakeford?
Ted stopped, then shrank back. Clearly the doctor was in charge. More men in white coats appeared and then escorted Harvey out of the door, with Blakeford following behind. Outside, Seth could see a long corridor leading away from his room.
Nasty business, really. Such a shame to meet in these circumstances. But these are sometimes how the best results are obtained.
Garrett mused.
I am terribly sorry for your loss, Seth. I'm sure you're feeling pretty low.
Seth felt the heaviness in his chest return at the mention of his family. He closed his eyes, but that only increased the vividness of the images in his head. Dr. Garrett's inference that they were dead hit him harder than when he had been told they were.
However, they do say karma is a bitch. You are by no means an innocent after the things you have done.
The doctor drifted off for a second, clearly remembering something.
Yes, well, nothing to be done about the past. So best to move forward into the future is what I say.
Seth was taken aback at this chipper comment, considering it was only a second ago he was giving Seth his condolences.
They are not dead,
Seth stated, more for his own sanity.
What? Oh, of course they're dead, my good fellow. I saw photographs of the body myself. No sense in settling into denial. You need to address the facts. That way, we can get this moving along nicely.
He got to his feet, taking Seth's head in his hands to examine the damage caused by Blakeford and the others, trying to free Harvey.
Well, this won't do at all,
he said.
I'm afraid you'll need stitches in a couple of those cuts, Seth. In an ideal world, I'd get right onto it, but unfortunately, orders are orders.
He reached into his pocket to retrieve some gauze, along with some sticking plaster, and then started to dress the wounds.
Best I can do under the circumstances,
he said apologetically as he worked. Once he finished, he reached into his other pocket. Seth was grabbed firmly by both arms as the syringe was stuck into his neck. Dr. Garrett pushed the plunger down so the contents flooded his bloodstream.
There now. This should let you sleep for an hour or so.
Seth's limbs became heavy. He couldn't resist as his captors guided him to lie on the bed.
Well, have a nice rest. I hope you will be more cooperative when you wake.
Seth's eyelids drooped as unconsciousness beckoned.
With luck, the cuts will have congealed significantly by then. No point in spoiling everyone's plans by bleeding to death now, is there?
The room started to go out of focus and his eyes closed before blackness took him.